Blog Talk Radio.
Or is it? Man resides in the brightly lit realm he assumes to be reality. But there is, unperceived by most, a netherworld. A place just as real, but not so clearly lit. An eerie side. Good evening, and welcome to Eerie House Radio. This is Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
the late Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here along with...
greetings and felicitations, CW, to make sure that these two, as always, mind their P's and Q's and ABCs.
So the guy Sly... oh, hi, Foxbane, who just logged in. Dave, don't say the late Dave Binkley. You have no idea what was going through my mind.
How do you know it isn't?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Don't do that to me. Precisely what I meant.
Oh, my. Slowly wandering around here, and I look in and log in. I said, oh, CW's, and I look on. Oh, my God, it's time.
That's all right. If we had to, we would bubble our way through, but it would, not necessary. The voice of reason has joined us. Although I think sometimes the CW
is more
CW the voice of reason.
Here. Yep, CW is here. You're right.
I am. Yes. I am here. The voice of reason, rationale, and raconteur. The three R's.
Yeah, I'm... I'm late and left over and something else. I'm not sure, but
I thought the three R's were reading, writing, and wrestling and racing.
Yeah,
and racing and wrestling.
Racing, yeah. That's right. You never did use that arithmetic thing, so I mean, you wouldn't know that's four.
And the rodeo.
Oh my.
And a root beer flute.
And a root beer flute. Oh, boy. Last minute changes, all kinds of fun. But no worries. We still have three terrific terror tales about hauntedness.
a haunting we will go tonight. Yeah. I do apologize. We did have an inner sanctum. It was an early episode, and I really thought I could fix it, and I couldn't. So...
it's still
broke.
Here
we go instead to the haunting circle. Is it weird circle?
The weird circle. The weird circle. Yeah.
The weird circle, yes.
Just as good and just as thrilling. Did anybody notice the font on the latest ad for tonight's show?
I saw it. I didn't catch it, though. The two different things there.
It's worked into the title of today's show as well.
Ah,
does that look familiar?
Get up there. There's an
actual font for this, but I had to create those lines. And I did it in honor of something that's going to happen about a month from now.
Oh, of course. May the 4th be with you.
Oh, no.
The 4th
season.
No. Yeah, the 4th season of Stranger Things is coming out. So I kind of pirated their font for tonight's advertisement.
Actually, I was thinking of the other May the 4th be with you.
No. That's just the Stranger Things. They're going to finally, long-awaited 4th season. Coming to Netflix.
I'm still thinking of the other May the 4th be with you.
For those that still have it, coming to Netflix.
Boy, yeah, they're shedding a lot of people, aren't they? Wow.
Oh, they're shedding like a sheepdog is what they are.
Yep.
Oh, my. But, yeah, lots of...
shedding.
That and they're shedding people and they're shedding stock prices. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't long ago that you thought that they were going to be the latest king that was going to be around forever. But, boy, you got to wonder now.
I know. They may go the way of, say, Redbox. Redbox thing.
I believe there are still a few Redboxes around. I think there's still a few around.
Yeah.
Or they could be the 21st century Blockbuster.
I was going to say, it's kind of like Blockbuster. There's still one, maybe.
One
I don't know.
No, I think that there was one in Alaska, and I think that one closed.
It finally closed. Ah, well.
I think they got froze out.
The end of an era.
Where's that rim shot when you need one? That's one we need to put in there, Dale, rim shot.
Or the screaming goat. Screaming goat. Cue the screaming goat.
Oh, the screaming goat. Boy, where is he? And he's running away from me. Ah, there he is. There we go.
Good heavens. I think Blockbuster Jukebox. In their ilk.
We have an exciting project coming up. And it all started because of Erie House Radio. James Travers, my animator guy, friend and animator for Spaceship One. Well, he heard me do my Boris Karloff impersonation for our little ditties.
Oh,
yeah. He said, you know, Dave, you ought to write this stand-up comic routine for Frankenstein. And I said, yeah, Jim, that would be fun. So next week, he actually made this Frankenstein character in his 3G graphics, and I thought, oh, crap, now I have to do this. Now, Dale, you've heard that. Well,
yes.
Ever since I sent that back to him, he's been creating and creating and creating. He's almost ready to start putting together, but he's built Drax Comedy Castle with neon lights flashing. He's now built the skeleton band that will be playing during this piece I wrote and did the voices for. So I can't wait to see this thing, but believe me, I'll be sharing this all over the place when we have it. It is, I can't wait to see this thing. He just came up with a band, the skeleton band. It's going to be great, guys. I can't wait to share this.
Movie host, radio show host, doing radio for the blind. He flies in space with his own series. And now he's Mel Blanc.
That's all, folks. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Dave, you're amazing. You are amazing.
No, Jim is magic. He just takes what I do and he takes it to an umpteenth level. It's absolutely
Not belittling his hand in that at all. I mean, he's made Spaceship One work well too, but it's a collaborative effort. You guys all work together well and put together a nice product.
I think we push each other creatively, and it makes it really fun.
It's the way to bring the best out in everybody, and we got the best of radio tonight about haunted things.
You know, if we're gonna work our way to the darkest, we got a couple of tales, like kind of fun ones. I thought we might save the crisis for in case Gar gets to join us.
I don't think he will. He messaged me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's not coming tonight, regardless.
Okay.
Not feeling well.
Two fun ones here. That case, in his honor, I think perhaps we should start with Crisis, Dale.
Absolutely. I was thinking along the same lines. Let's start on the light end and head down the dark path. Interesting title on this one from Crisis, Dave. The Haunted Plumbing of Harold Poole. Is this an adult topic, or what is this? Is this a medical condition?
I'm telling you, like I said, two of these are kind of fun, and there's the there's our dark world circle we're working our way to. But this is a fun one. And because one of the 3,287.5 jobs that Gar has had, one of them was as a plumber. I only got to be a plumber's assistant, which means I got to hold the you know, use that suction cup thing. But the Gar was an actual plumber. And when he saw these titles, he couldn't wait to dig into that one. So
about the only way I fit into that is nowadays, if I bend over to pick something up, I get a plumber's, well, anyway.
Anyway. Careful how you pick that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I know. We're not talking about a proctologist, are we?
No. I guess we are now. No. I should probably toddle along to Radio Land with the part one of the haunted plumbing of poor Harold Poole from Crisis. When was this originally broadcast? Does anyone know?
This is episode number 72 from... June 5th of 1975.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis.
Starring Gabe Dinkley.
There isn't another living soul for 2 miles in any direction. That's why you all wanted to move out here. That's why I have to dig this confounded hole in the ground for a septic tank, because there aren't any sewers out in this godforsaken wilderness. Oh, if it wasn't for you,
wasn't for me, you'd be in jail. That's where you'd be, and you know it.
Oh, you have to bring that up, don't you?
Well, it seems that you sometimes forget. Now, are you through digging for the night?
You know, Carolina, you act as if I enjoyed sweating my tail off down in that 6-foot hole in the ground. The only reason I'm trying to get it finished is because this antique house you wanted so bad didn't have any inside plumbing. So we have to have a septic tank, and I have to plumb the whole doggone house.
Well, you were a plumber, and it's easier for you than it would be for the next man.
Yeah, but the whole thing would be easier if we just stayed in the city and lived in an apartment.
Where you could continue your life as a burglar?
Well, a beach worse than sod.
Which is what you'd be doing in the county jail farm.
So? That makes it about even, don't it?
Harold, you know good and well that I paid for this old place with my own money to get you out in the country, away from temptation, to start a new life.
Yeah, a life of misery so far.
How much further do you have to go?
Huh?
Before the hole is deep enough to bury the septic tank.
You kidding me? I'm only 6 feet down. That tank will have to set 9 feet under. Anyway, I'm bushed and it's getting cold out here.
Well, then, come in like I asked you to.
Drat the old mausoleum. When I think I could be sitting back in the apartment, plenty of steam heat, a super to take care of the plumbing if it goes wrong.
But you're a plumber by profession.
I'm a burglar by profession. I only got into the plumbing racket because it gets me into a lot of houses. I hate plumbing. So what do? You threaten to turn me in if I don't marry you and move out to this crummy old relic.
Well, after all, you did burglarize my house. And my brother is a police officer.
And y'all are a blackmailer. Mm-hmm.
Call it that if you like. You came to my apartment to fix the plumbing one day. And that night you came back to steal me blind. Only I caught you at it. So we made a little deal.
I know.
You were a criminal, but you were attractive and single. And I was unlucky in love. So?
So we made a deal. Why remind me of it?
Because, Harold, dear, I want you to remember that if you don't treat me right, I can still turn you over to my brother.
Oh, you're a real sweetheart, Carolina.
Look, it's past 11, and I want to get to bed. Now, you try and get that septic tank hooked up by tomorrow, Harold. It's getting awfully inconvenient to use the outhouse.
Well, now that you've had a good chance to meet Harold and his recent bride, Carolina, what do you think of them? Not your ideally matched couple, to be sure, but they do have something in common. They need each other. Carolina had some money, a nice job, a good apartment, but no boyfriends. Harold was good-looking, a fair plumber, but a clumsy burglar. Harold needs Carolina to keep him out of jail, and Carolina needs Harold, well, for all the usual reasons. But can a marriage based on these practical considerations ever succeed? No, because there is one important ingredient missing in this marriage, and of course that's love. In just a moment, we'll return to our story and see what happens when this marriage of convenience reaches a sudden crisis in a tale of suspense we call The Haunted Plumbing of Harold Poole.
Sunrise.
Will you stop pulling the covers off me? I'm freezing to death. And close that window.
You know, I think it rained during the night. Everything.
Rained? Oh, no. That pit will be full of water.
Well, it's past 6 a.m., Harold. You better get to it. Almost done.
Yeah. About another hour to go.
Well, then I'll call my brother to get him to come out and help you put the tank in the hole.
Yep. I'll be ready in about an hour.
Harold?
Yeah?
My brother, and he says he's tied up for a while, and he may not be out here until sometime this afternoon or evening.
Okay, but me, I can wait. Stand out of the way, will you? I'm coming up. Whew.
Are you done down there?
Yeah.
Is it deep enough?
It ought to be.
And you'll have it hooked up by tonight.
You kidding? Once the tank's in a hole, I got to connect it to the soil pipe and cover it up. Lay the drain field and cover that up.
I just don't know anything about all those plumber's terms. Now, just tell me, will I be able to...
No.
Oh, but you promised.
I didn't promise anything. Now, lay off.
I don't like the tone of voice you've been using with me, Harold Poole.
Oh, yeah? Well, you know what you can do about it.
Yes, you bet I know what I can do about it. You know, Harold, frankly, as a husband, you've turned out to be a big disappointment.
That's so.
You certainly don't provide much income.
Nobody out in this forgotten land needs plumbing. But this is where you wanted to live.
You were maybe good-looking, but, well, you haven't been showing much interest in me.
And I wonder why. Have you forgotten? The only reason I married you was to keep you from going to the police.
Yes, that was our agreement.
What do you mean, was?
Well, now that the honeymoon is over, as they say...
Listen, Carolina, we had a deal.
I know.
I married you, we moved out of town, I plumbed this old farmhouse, and you were going to forget that you knew about my burglary.
But as I said, Harold, we're really not compatible, are we? And I do know what I can do about it.
Oh, no.
I've never thrown away the little kit of burglar tools I made you give up to me. Or the Polaroid picture I took of you trying to ransack my apartment.
You kept those?
As a little insurance, sweetie.
That's a pretty rotten trick, Carolina. You know that?
Oh, wait till I show them to my brother Yancey. He never did care too much for you anyway.
Oh, hey, Carolina.
You know, I must have been desperate making that deal with you. Just look at you standing there, mud up to your knees. I could have done a lot better than a plumber.
You shouldn't talk that way, Carolina.
Will you keep away from me? You'll get mud on me.
You can't do this to me, Carolina.
Get your hands off me. Harold! Harold!
Hi, Carolina. It
the answer?
Oh, evening, Harold. Caroline in the house?
No, she took the car and drove into town to get something for dinner. Say, now you mention it, she ought to be back by now. What time's it getting to be?
Almost 7.
Well, she ought to be back any minute. Hope you can stay for dinner. Carolina's counting on her.
Well, seeing as I drove all the way out from town,
I knew we could count on you. Oh, this is the septic tank.
Yeah, I see. Big cement job.
And that's the hole she goes into.
Well, dig it all by yourself?
Yep.
Some project. Well, how do we get the tank into the hole?
Well, I rigged this block and tackle. I think the two of us can manage it. We swing it over the hole and drop it down in on the ropes.
Then the pipe from the house goes into this hole in the tank.
That's right.
But what's this big manhole on top of the tank?
To clean it out.
Oh, yeah, sure. How's come you got the manhole cover on it already?
Well, that's the way you do it.
Seems funny to me. Be a lot lighter if we lowered the tank into the hole and then put the cover on the manhole.
Well, it's easy to see you're no plumber yet.
No, I am just a cop. Well, let's get started on this thing before it gets pitch dark.
Whoops, and we got a little pitch dark on the volume there, but we are back after part one of the haunted plumbing.
Yeah.
Harold Poole at the racetrack.
Well, that's where he'd rather be. He'd rather be anywhere but where he is, I think.
That's right. Muddy Harold. They have Fog's Bane.
Are they a couple or what?
A couple of what is the question?
Ooh.
Couple of characters for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make the Bickerses look like a happy couple.
I'm telling you. Oh, I get a kick out of those Bickerses.
Match made in Hades. Their name should be Alan Pegg.
Alan Pegg, yeah.
Alan Pegg.
Yeah, Alan Pegg.
Yeah, but you can't afford the Frank Sinatra song to. That's kind of funny. I've seen that in syndication, and they don't use the Love and Marriage song in syndication for.
My son bought the set of all of them, and they have a phony beginning. It's not the Sinatra.
Yeah, I don't know whether.
Why not?
Just
I thought they would have paid the royalties on it.
Well, it's funny, when you watch it on Pluto, though, it has the original theme on it. It has Sinatra.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
These are facts you must know, America, about Married with Children. This is important now. Forget the stock market. Forget the Ukraine. Just forget it all. It's all about this right here.
Boy, I tell you what, there are times I'd like to forget it all, but here he is.
Yep. That's the whole point of the show, a little escapism.
Your oasis from the rest of the world. Ta-da! Your desert island with a professor and Marianne.
Fonsbane brings up a good point about the theme. Maybe they can't rearrange the royalty. You know? Who knows? That's a good point.
Yeah, there's some shows that they have had such problems getting the rights. I think one of them is Moonlighting. They have such problems acquiring the rights to the music that they had to originally air it. They can't even release it in DVD.
Yeah. I can bet money is always, always, always a root of the issue.
Yeah.
Well,
follow the money.
I guess so. Well, that's an easy thing. Just, you know, strip the music out and get someone to cover it, because they can cover it by some means, or just, you know, they pay a in-debt college student in a music class to do it, and they'll do it for, you know, a couple of textbooks and a glass of water.
Yeah, there's tribute bands for just about everything. There should be something for those, but At this point, if something was done moonlighting era, would you have all the original files that you could scrape off the music and put in new? That's, I think, would be a question.
I think they would, because it was done on a primary network at the time. So I'm thinking they would have had, you know, kept everything because they wanted to do syndication. So,
but would it be in one piece? You know, a lot of when I save something, now I try to save all the original video, but if I don't, then I'm not able to take the pieces, parts, and scrape it and put different things in.
Well, we're talking about a major studio that produced it, so I'm thinking they should have a tech to put it together.
It depends how they saved it. If they broke out the tracks, that would be easy, the soundtracks.
Yeah.
Then it would be a lot well, not easy, but it would be significantly easier.
But
anyway.
But the music was such a part of that show and other shows as well. And there was such a wide variety. If you didn't have the original music in there, it wouldn't be the same show. That's for darn sure.
That's true. A little piece of history there. Yeah. Well, let's get back to find out what happens to these two goofs in the haunted plumbing.
Here's a hint. Here's a hint. At the end, we only heard one of the two goofs, didn't we?
Oh, ho. And the plot thickens. The plot thickens.
Let's find out.
That 9 o'clock, afraid it is. More coffee, Auntie?
No, I can't even drink this cup. You make terrible coffee, Poole.
Sorry. Gee, I wonder when Carolina's coming back.
There wouldn't be something you haven't told me, would there?
Well, how do you mean?
Something wrong betwixt you two.
What makes you say that?
Oh, I don't know. Just a hunch.
Well, as a matter of fact...
Uh-huh.
We had a fight this afternoon just after she called you.
Poole, if you ever lay a hand on my little sister, you're going to be in a world of trouble.
Hey, it wasn't like that, Yancey. We argued, and she got sore at me and left.
What was the argument about?
Well, it's kind of personal.
I'm her brother, Poole. I am also a cop.
Well, it's embarrassing. But, well, you might as well know. Carolina has found herself another...
Don't believe it.
I know, neither did I. But she told me she was tired of being married to a plumber, and... I guess life hasn't been very exciting.
You've only been married 3 months, for Pete's sake. And now you're telling me she's run off with some other guy?
Makes me look like some kind of a sucker, don't it?
Who is the guy?
I don't know his name. She wouldn't tell me. Said she was afraid I'd do something to him.
How?
All I know is he sells used cars.
Where?
I don't know. Someplace in Nashville.
Nashville? There's got to be 1,000 car lots in Nashville.
Yep. I guess we've got to face it, Yancey. We may never see Carolina again.
Mrs. Carolina Poole is definitely not living at home anymore. Which is not to say that she left home, but she certainly isn't living there anymore. Undeterred by this development, Harold Poole busily finishes up his major plumbing job, seals the septic tank, attaches the drain field, and then goes into the old farmhouse to check his handiwork.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. Just the way Carolina wanted it. Too bad she's not around to enjoy it.
Harold.
What's that?
But I am around to enjoy it.
Checked every inch of this job. It's as sound as a dollar. Oh, it must have been my imagination. But I swear I heard a voice. I'll try it again.
Harold, are you doing that just to aggravate me? Are you stupid? Do you hear me?
No, it's impossible. That bathroom is haunted. But it can't be. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, steady down, old man. Have yourself a drink. Get a hold of yourself. Yeah, I'll have me a drink. Oh. Where's that bourbon? I'll just put a little water in it.
Oh. Are you trying to run away from me?
No! Oh, that voice. It's coming from the drain. From the drain in the sink. Carolina, is that you?
Well, certainly it's me.
Well, what are you doing down the drain?
Oh, you ought to know that better than anyone.
Oh, I'm cracking up. The toilet, the kitchen sink, the bathtub. I'll try the bathtub. Carolina, I'm in the bathtub. Can you hear me?
Well, of course I can hear you.
But that can't be. Oh, my gosh, someone's at the door.
Hi, Harold.
Yancey.
Drove on out to see if you heard anything from Carolina.
Heard anything from... Oh, no, not a word, Yance.
Mind if I come on in?
No, not at all.
I've got the department checking every used car lot in Nashville, and I don't suppose you remembered to call missing person.
Oh, gosh, Yance. In all the excitement, I just...
No, I figured you didn't. So, I did. They'll find her, Pooh. Just rest easy. They'll find her. Say, let me have a glass of water.
Water?
If you don't mind.
How about a nice cup of coffee?
Oh, I have tasted your coffee. No, water's all I want. Never mind, I'll get it myself.
No, don't turn on the faucet.
What's the matter?
The water shut off. Yeah, I had to shut it off at the main. A little plumbing work.
Oh, okay. I'll just have some pop then.
Oh, sure. Whatever you like, Aunt.
By the way, Pooh, what clothes did she take with her?
Clothes?
So we'll know what she might be wearing.
Gosh, I really hadn't noticed. I'll check on it right away and let you know.
Oh, do that. Did you get your plumbing working? Toilet flush okay?
Oh, it works like a charm, Yance. Like a charm.
I don't suppose that I could...
No water pressure, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, okay, I'll be on my way, Pooh. But remember, if you hear anything from Carolina, I want to know about it.
Right? Oh, right, Yance.
Thanks for the pop.
Oh, he knows. Oh, I got to get out of here. Take the car and get back to town. Oh, no. It's coming from the kitchen sink again. What is it? What do you want?
You'll never get away with it, you know. Yancy will find out what you did to me.
No, he won't. No, he won't. I'll take care of you once and for all. I'm looking for something that'll take care of you once and for all. Where is it? Oh, here it is. You know what I have in my hand, Carolina? It's a big, fresh can of drain unplugger. And it contains caustic lye. Nothing can survive a shot of this.
Oh, Harold, you're so stupid.
Stupid, Emma? We'll just get a load of this. There. Now go clear your throat.
You're never going to learn, are you, Harold? You can't hurt me anymore.
You can't live through that. I poured enough of that lye into the drain and melt 50 feet of pipe.
You can't hurt me, Harold. But I can hurt you.
Here's a place. Rooms to rent. This'll do. Any place will do. Come on. Come on, somebody. Answer the door.
Well, howdy.
Hello. You have a room to rent?
Sure do.
Can I see it?
Right this way. Nice sunny room on the west side of the building. You're too hot for you. Got Venetian blinds. They don't use Venetian blinds too much anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Here we go. Nice airy room. Good bed. Lots of closets.
Yeah, space. Fine. I'll take it.
Well, I didn't show you the bathroom right down
the
hall.
No, that's fine. How much for a week?
Better have a look at the bathroom first. There you go. Not the latest style, but she works.
Yeah, that's great. Those old standards were noisy but strong.
Huh? You talking about the commode?
Yeah, I'm a plumber. I was just saying that this particular model was a noisy one, but very durable.
Say, this is lucky. I've been going to call a plumber. This old John's been acting up lately.
Well, I have a look at it when I can.
Some of the time works fine. Other times, I don't know. And then just today, well, let me show you.
No, no, really, I don't...
Well, seems to work perfectly now.
Probably something in a water cabinet. I'll look at it tonight.
All right. Hope you do enjoy yourself while you're here.
Oh, man. Well, guess I'll just wash up. Oh, boy. There's nothing like a nice, free-flowing drain.
Busy. Be out in a minute.
Wow. Oh, feels good.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. This is Yancey. I want to talk to you.
No. What's happening to me?
Oh, you got someone in there with you?
Oh, no, no. I...
Harold.
No. You can't be in this drain. You can't.
Oh, I like this one so much better. It's ever so much nicer in the city than out in that old septic tank.
You know, I have the distinct impression that wherever Harold Poole may go in this life, when nature calls, or it's necessary to wash dishes, take a shower or a bath, he'll be reminded of Carolina. I'll be back in just a minute with a scene or two from next week's Crisis. The Haunted Plumbing of Harold Poole featured John Amendola, Pat French, and Stephen Hilliard, and was written and directed by yours truly, Jim French. Join us next Thursday at this same time, won't you, for Crisis.
That show really made me have to go. All that running
this
water.
Show is dedicated. Yeah, this show is dedicated to Archie Bunker, who
That's
first
right.
flushed a toilet on television.
Yep. That's true.
Where's Archie?
Stifle yourself up there. I'm stifling.
What, Archie?
Now, Arch, you can't just do that, Arch.
Hey, did we learn anything from this wacky tale?
I don't know about you, but I certainly did.
Oh, well, then, share it. Tentatively... Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, sometimes a marriage license isn't worth the paper you flush it with.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, oh. The spirits are about to speak.
Oh, I was hoping for a flusher on that one, yeah.
I didn't want to overkill it. You know, we already used it for Archie.
I feel so much better now.
Fresh as a daisy, huh? All right.
Yeah, exactly. This is sort of reminiscent. This is kind of sort of reminiscent of Poe's Telltale Heart. If you will, only this is a telltale
toilet.
Plumbing.
Septic tank. Yeah.
The telltale toilet. Oh my gosh. Coming soon to Erie House.
Yeah.
You can bet. Or some such.
You know,
oh, the just... chills. Oh, the horror. Oh, the flush. the telltale toilet. Ba-whoosh.
Ba-whoosh.
You know,
gotta have that power.
One thing
action.
That, way back in the weirdness days of radio, my brother sent me this bit that he did with his roommate. And it was for the weirdest movie of the week. It was the House of Flusher and instead of Usher. And the guy, he just said he ran through the boys, the men's room, and kept flushing all the toilets there with his flush.
The bad flusher.
That was the House of Flusher.
Oh, good heavens. I like it. I like it. Somehow,
if we're going to go Poe, we might as well go Poe all the way down the drain. That's what I say.
Yep.
Ah, yes, I can hear Poe spinning in his grave. Take that, Edgar Allan.
Ouch. And speaking of Edgar Allan, we did want to get a little darker as we move along. Where do we go next, Dave?
I got news for you. This next one is probably lighter than the last one.
Woo!
The Mysterious Traveler. And let me tell you something about this Mysterious Traveler, Dale. I listened to it several times. I got a big kick out of it. And I realized this is almost more like A Quiet Please. The way that the whole thing runs, it almost seems like A Quiet Please instead of Mysterious, because Mysterious Traveler is so dark and all this terrible stuff. This is a lot of fun with the haunted trailer.
Does it take place in West Virginia, or
It takes place in
different kind of trailer, or what?
It's a trailer that moves.
A caravan, perhaps?
So close.
Could be. But
so pretty
fun
close
story. Fun story here.
Good old Bob. Speaking of Archie Bunker, one reason he never married is images of being married to Sally Struthers dance before my mind.
Oh, gosh.
and I'm sorry. Well, nothing against her. I loved her character. I loved her character. But she was the wrong spokesperson for the hungry, okay? She was just absolutely the wrong spokesperson
now,
for the hungry.
She didn't have that dietary issue when she initially started that. That came sort of later on down the line. So don't be cruel.
Okay. But I'm just it's not good optics, let's just say.
Yeah.
That's as close as I'm politically correct.
She was also the voice of the sister in that long-running dinosaur series.
Really?
She was the sister in that. Yeah.
Oh.
Very, very, very talented actress.
Indeed.
Yep.
Yep. Man, we got some talented people in our next program from the Mysterious Traveler.
Traveler.
Yeah, we ought to be traveling along.
See what I have to deal with? People reeling them back. Reeling them back from the abyss. Reeling them back from the abyss.
Just try it anyway. onward to the hottest trailer. This one was originally broadcast on
episode number 359 from June 3rd, 1952.
Transcribed. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler. Written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, and starring one of radio's foremost actors, James Stevens, in The Haunted Trailer. This is the Mysterious Traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little.
So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable if you can as we take a little cross-country trip in the haunted trailer. Before we begin, I have a question for you. Do you believe in ghosts? No? That's good. Then my story won't bother you in the least. So let me introduce Melvin McGraw, as nice a young man as you'll ever meet in this world or the next. Melvin is very unhappy. He has a story he wants to get off his chest. All right, Melvin, tell us all about it. Maybe it'll buck up your spirits.
Spirits. Don't mention that word to me. What I could tell you about spirits. In fact, I'm going to. You are now listening to a desperate man. And yet, just 2 months ago, I was sitting on top of the world. I was heading for California in my coupe, pulling a brand new trailer. In California, I had a girl waiting for me. Her name was Louise, and we were going to be married. We were going to take a 2 weeks honeymoon trip in the trailer, then settle down in a little vine-covered cottage. But I haven't the heart to go into details. Just say that as I drove through the Catskills, I was happier than a lark. I'd made a late start, so I drove until well after dark. Then I found myself on an empty stretch of road in the mountains with a bad storm coming up. I didn't want to drive through a storm, so when I came to a tiny, dark railroad station, I pulled off the road beside it and made myself comfortable in my own trailer. In no time at all, I was asleep. But about midnight, a terrific clap of thunder woke me up. I sat up, bumped my head, and blinked. The storm was raging outside, and the trailer door had blown open. It was banging back and forth. I got up to close it, but before I reached it, it shut itself firmly. I was about to get back into my bunk when somewhere in the darkness a voice spoke.
Ah, now this is something like...
It was an odd, unearthly sort of voice, and at first I thought I'd just imagined it. Then it spoke again.
A house on wheels, furniture and everything. Some fun, eh, chum? They never had nothing like this when I was alive.
Then I realized what must have happened. I'd left the radio on, and I was hearing some late program. I reached over to click it off, but it was already off. Puzzled, I found the light switch and turned it. The trailer was empty, except for me. I was staring around in perplexity when I heard it again, that strange voice.
Over here, chum, in the easy chair. That's right. Now, can you see me?
Can I see him? I rubbed my eyes, then rubbed them again. There was something white and misty sitting in my easy chair. Something that grew more and more solid as I stared at it, until I could see it quite plainly. Like looking at a disreputable old man carved out of a chunk of London fog. It was... the only thing it could be was...
That's right, chum. I'm a ghost. My name is Spike Higgins. Pleased to meet you.
What do you mean you're a ghost? There's no such thing as a ghost.
Oh, no? Then listen to this. Did you ever hear a more ghostly groan than that? Or maybe you'd like to hear a banshee scream. You like it, chum? Every ghost can do it. And now I'll give you another demonstration. Where we call this one number 3B, the fatal warning. Are you ready? It'll curl your head.
Are you prepared to meet your fate?
Stop.
Well, I ain't even begun yet. I got a whole bag of ghostly tricks to try out. Well, it's years since I had a chance to use a single one of them. Hey, what about some invisible footsteps, eh? See, I can do that without even stirring from this chair. And then there's the hollow knock on the front door. I'll demonstrate that, too. And now the door creaks open. Now, listen. See, now just suppose you was alone in a deserted house at night and you heard all them noises. What would you do, huh? I'm asking you, chum.
I'd run like the dickens.
Yeah, I bet you would. Anybody would. And now do you believe I'm a ghost? Or should I give you some more of my repertoire?
No. I'm convinced you're a ghost.
Well, that's better. Now that we're acquainted, you can call me Spike. That's my name, Spike Higgins. Born March 28, 1888. Died April 15, 1930. Well done, now good and faithful servant.
Oh, I certainly wish I could wake up. This dream I'm having is ghastly.
Not ghastly, ghostly. And you're not asleep. Hey, but speaking of sleeping, it's after midnight, and this is the first time I've been near a bed in more than 20 years. What do you say we turn in, man?
You mean, you're suggesting you're going to sleep in my trailer?
Well, why not? That's what a trailer's for. A home away from home.
No. I won't stand for it. Now, get out. Why did you ever come in here in the first place?
Well, why did you stop in my territory? Answer me that, chum.
Don't call me chum. My name is Melvin.
If my name was Melvin, I'd rather be called chum. Okay, Melvin, you invited me in.
I did no such thing. I deny it.
Well, you stopped beside my railroad station, didn't you?
What do you mean, your railroad station?
That old station outside, I haunted.
A haunted railroad station? I never heard of such a thing.
There's plenty you never heard of. Well, back in 1930, I was a bum, see? I rode the boxcars. Well, one night, I was trying to get away from a railroad bull. Toughest railroad dick in the business, name of Dan Thatcher. Well, I slipped off the top of a boxcar just as we was passing his station, see? Well, so I got appointed resident ghost for Seven Pine Station. A real lousy break. Hasn't been anybody in the station after dark for 10 years. And then tonight you come along and park. Well, naturally, I invite myself in. Oh, that's some layout you got here.
Well, why did you stay if you disliked it so?
Had to. I was doomed never to leave. Punishment, you see.
You were doomed to stay here forever?
Like I said, never to leave. Why?
I'll show you, Spike. This is where you and I part company. I know you think I was dreaming, but I wasn't. I was sitting there in my trailer talking to the ghost of a very disreputable-looking hobo. And I saw that I had to take drastic action. Spike had said he was doomed to stay there forever. But I wasn't. I hurried out of my trailer, climbed into my coupe, started the motor, and pulled away from there. I didn't stop until I'd gone 20 miles and left Spike Higgins' ghost safely behind me. Then I found a spot off the road, stopped, and went back to my trailer, completely bushed. Oh, boy, now for some sleep. Oh, I'm dead.
Watch your language, Melvin. I'm dead, not you.
Spike.
Here I am, Melvin, in the other bunk.
No, you can't be. You said you were doomed to stay forever back at the railroad station.
Well, I said I was forbidden to leave. I didn't leave. You hauled me away in your trailer. So now the curse is broken. I can go any place I want.
Then go. Any place. I don't care where. As long as it's someplace else.
Oh, but I like it here, Melvin. Nice and cozy, good company, plenty of scenery. I tell you what I do. If looking at me bothers you, I'll merge. Then you won't be able to see me.
Merge with what?
Merge with the other way. So long, chum. I mean, Melvin. So long.
He was gone. Except for me, the trailer was empty. Then I knew it had just been a dream. I took a stiff drink of scotch and tumbled into my bunk. Next morning, the sun was shining. I thought about Louise and cheered up. I made myself a cup of coffee and started out happy as a lark again. I stayed happy almost all day. Then, as it was getting on towards evening, a cold, clammy draft chilled the back of my neck, and...
Hello, Melvin. It's me, your old chum, Spike.
You're not my old chum, and where are you? I can't see.
Well, give me time, Melvin. Give me time. I've been merged with the underwear all night. I can't materialize again too fast or I'll strain my protoplasm. Yeah, how's that?
You
You transparent monstrosity. I thought you were just a dream.
Oh, have I got to convince you all over again? Okay, I'll run through my repertory for you. The ghostly groan, the dying scream, the scream of the banshee, the hollow footsteps, the squeaking door.
No, anything but that. I couldn't stand it again.
Well, okay, then. Oh, but I left one out last night. The mournful howl of a dog. You know, in every ghost story, there's always a dog howling someplace. Well, that ain't a real dog. That's just a standard ghost sound effect. You like this, see?
No. My nerves can't stand anymore.
No, then, Jum, you're going to have to toughen up. You're going to be hearing a lot of them ghostly noises, and you just got to get used to them.
What do you mean?
Well, you and me are going to be seeing a lot of each other. I am now the resident ghost of this here trailer. Congratulations, Melvin. You own the first haunted trailer.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Nobody ever heard of a haunted trailer.
Well, they're going to hear of this one. You'll be famous all over America.
Oh, that's absurd. A haunted trailer. Why not a haunted ferry boat, a haunted boxcar, or a haunted Pullman?
What, do you think there ain't? Why, there's a haunted ferry boat makes the crossing at 125th Street every stormy night. And then there's a haunted boxcar. Never gets where it's going. Valamine rides, the name of Boxcar Benson. And speaking of trains, didn't you never hear the Phantom Express?
The Phantom Express?
Yeah, it's an all-Pullman car job, and nobody rides it but hobos who've been given a reward, see? It only travels by twilight, and it goes 1,000 miles an hour. Always traveling, never stopping. That's heaven for us poor restless hobos.
Indeed.
Yeah, so what's so funny about a haunted trailer? Now I ask you.
Well, as I got underway again, I was worried. The idea of taking Louise for a honeymoon in a haunted trailer didn't appeal to me. I didn't think it would appeal to Louise either, especially since Spike Higgins seemed to be a ghost completely lacking in all delicate sensibilities. But I didn't have any idea what to do about it. Not even the ghost of an idea. Presently, Spike oozed himself back into the trailer, and I kept on driving until almost 9 o'clock. Then I turned into a little motel and arranged to park overnight. I had some supper at a diner nearby and then went back to my trailer, hoping against hope that Spike would be gone. But he wasn't. The trailer was full of cigar smoke and the smell of whiskey. There was Spike sprawled out on my bunk, inhaling the smoke of a cigar that burned in the ashtray, and from time to time leaning over to sniff at an open bottle of scotch. And to make it worse, another phantasmal character, long and thin and disreputable looking, occupied the other bunk. They were two thoroughly intoxicated spirits.
Oh, many brave hearts lie asleep in the deep.
So beware.
Spike, what is the meaning of this?
Oh, hello, Melvin. Hey, Melvin, I want you to meet an old pal of mine, Nitro Nelson.
Pleased to meet you, Melvin. I'd shake hands if I had any hands.
Spike, I asked you a question. What is the meaning of this?
Why, Melvin, we're just celebrating, that's all. I ain't seen Nitro for pretty near 25 years, so we're having a little fun. We're just a couple of high spirits. You got it?
Very funny. Well, get this Nitro ghost out of here at once. This is my trailer, and I don't want him here.
Yeah, sure, Melvin. It's your trailer, only I'm the resident ghost, see? I got full rights to extend hospitality to any other ghost, ghoul, phantasm, spirit, spook, boogeyman, werewolf, vampire, or poltergeist I want to. Look it up, the Spirit's Handbook, Section 7, Paragraph B.
Besides, Melvin, there's a lot worse things than me that Spike could have invited. You know, some of them werewolves now. Brother.
All right. Let's not talk about it. Just thinking of such things makes me nervous. But you'll have to stop singing. Suppose somebody heard you and came to investigate.
Oh. Well, okay. And anyway, it's time to turn on the radio.
It's actually time to turn us back on as we complete part one. Of the haunted trailer.
Quite a unique adventure from Mysterious Traveler, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm not accustomed to this approach. I, like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's fun. It really does remind me more of a Quiet Please. So that is kind of the way that he presents things a lot of times. But we're on Mysterious Traveler. So what show would a ghost listen to, you think, back in 1952?
A ghost? I don't know. The Invisible Man.
I guess we'll find out when the show continues, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm liking this ghost.
What an obnoxious ghost.
Yeah.
I'm telling
no
you.
Kidding.
He sounded almost more like ghost. A thug ghost or a character out of Broadway and
The Dead End Kids. The Dead End Kids. The Bowery Boys.
Yeah.
The Ghost of Satch. Oh, God. That would be awful.
The Ghost of Satch.
Yes, Hunts Hall's ghost. That's all we need.
Yeah, it's a different kind of story, a different kind of character. And this was late in the series, too. I don't know that it lasted. Into 53, and so I do not know, but I think this is, you know, for what an interesting tale if this is one of the last ones to go out on.
It's certainly a lot of fun, and we might as well wrap up the haunted trailer from the Mysterious Traveler. Yep.
And anyway, it's time to turn on the radio.
Turn on the radio? For what?
But to hear it, stupid. Let's see. This ought to be the right station.
May I ask, merely out of morbid curiosity, what program a ghost would listen to?
Well, you don't have to ask. You'll hear it. This is a Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable if you can. Mysterious Traveler, oh, that's a pipper of a program.
Oh, no, no. Turn it off.
What's the matter? You don't like the Mysterious Traveler all us ghosts listen to?
Oh, I like it all right, but you don't expect me to listen to it with two ghosts right in the same room with me, do you?
Sometimes he even scares us. Okay, we'll turn it off.
Look, Spike.
Yeah, Mel.
What'll you take to go away and leave me alone, both of you?
Oh, Melvin, you don't understand. I've took up my abode in this here trailer. I'm your ghost now. Your family ghost. Where thou ghost, I will ghost. You get it?
Then am I to understand you refuse to clear out?
And the answer to that, Melvin, is absolutely.
In that case, I'm going to rent a cabin for the night. I couldn't possibly sleep in this trailer with you two hunks of animated fog.
Suit yourself, Melvin. Anyway, me and Spike got some practicing to do. Okay, Spike, let's go. First, the mournful dog howl.
That night, I slept in a rented cabin. The next morning, I drove on westward with my two phantom passengers and tried to pretend they weren't there. I almost got used to them. I suppose a man can get used to anything, even to having a permanent cold chill running down his backbone. When we passed through Denver, Nitro Nelson dropped off, saying he wanted to haunt up some old pals of his, leaving me with Spike Higgins.
Well, Melvin, it's just you and me together now, just the two of us. Until you get married to this, then there'll be the three of us.
I don't think Louise is going to like that.
Oh, sure she will. Anyway, I'm sticking around.
I hate to think what Louise will say when I tell her about it.
Hey, where are we going on our honeymoon? The three of us, I mean.
I figured on driving up to Oregon to see the mountains.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Just as long as we get away from California.
What have you got against California?
Oh, just that Dan Basher lives there now.
Dan Basher?
Yeah, you remember that tough railroad dick who was chasing me when I fell off that freight? Oh, he's the toughest bull in the business.
Hey, you're not afraid of him now, are you?
No, of course not. Oh, only the grapevine says he's kind of sick, see, and he might be entering the spirit world any time now. I wouldn't want to run into him again if he did. He's got a grudge against me. Hey, you know, I just thought of something.
What?
Well, right at first, Louise probably won't be able to see me or to hear me, see. On account of a family ghost is only visible to the household, you get me?
Yes, but I don't understand.
Well, as soon as you're married, she'll be part of the household, and then she can see me. Until then, no. Wake me up as soon as it gets dark, huh, chum?
Three days ago, we reached Santa Monica. I rented parking space in an auto camp and immediately phoned Louise.
Melvin, darling, I'm so glad you're here. I've been worried not hearing from you.
Oh, I'll explain all about that. When can I come and see you?
Well, I better come see you first, Melvin. You see, my uncle isn't well, and the doctor said he must have quiet. I'll be there in an hour.
I hurried back to the trailer and tried to clean it up. Spike Higgins' ghost lay on a bunk and watched me cynically.
Hey, take it easy, Melvin. You're no good at housework. You know, this place needs a woman's touch.
Now, listen, you. You've got to promise not to frighten Louise.
I told you, Melvin. She won't even know I'm here.
I certainly hope not. That would ruin everything. Here she comes now. Coming, darling.
Melvin.
Louise. Oh, here, let me help you in.
Oh, thank you, Melvin. So this is it. The trailer you wrote me about.
Uh-huh, darling. Hey, look. Here's the stove, and an ice box, and a built-in bar.
A bar?
Uh-huh.
Oh, now, Melvin, you know I disapprove of spirits.
I resent that.
Be quiet.
Why, Melvin?
Oh, excuse me, darling. I wasn't talking to you.
Well, then who were you talking to?
Oh, it's hard to explain. Look, Louise, here's a writing desk that folds into the wall, and a regular easy chair.
Well, it's very nice, Melvin, but... All the same, we're not taking any spirits along on our honeymoon, bar or no bar.
Oh, she got a surprise coming to her.
I said to be quiet.
Melvin, how can you talk to me like that?
Come on, show her who's boss, Melvin.
I told you to shut up.
Melvin, I won't stay here and be insulted. You can telephone me when you're ready to apologize.
With that, Louise stormed out. That evening, I had to plead with her on the telephone for half an hour before she would consent to let me drive out and see her at her home.
Oh, really, Melvin? You were very rude this afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. I'm overwrought. I apologize.
Well, you do look rather haggard, Melvin. And the way your hair stands on end, you really should do something about it.
I wish I could. Louise, how soon can we get married?
Well, I don't know. It depends on Uncle Dan.
Uncle Dan?
Uncle Dan Basher, my mother's brother. He's very ill. The doctor just gives him a few more days.
Your uncle is Dan Basher, who used to be a railroad detective?
Why, yes.
And he's dying?
I'm afraid so, Melvin. But you needn't look so pleased about it.
Oh, sorry, darling. Look, I must talk to him now.
Oh, but the doctor said he can't.
Just for
be
a minute,
sick.
Darling. It's very important.
Well, maybe just for a minute. Come this way. This is his door. Uncle Dan?
Yeah?
Do you feel strong enough to talk?
What about?
Well, it's Melvin, my fiancé. He wants to meet you.
Send him in.
Come in, Melvin.
Thank you, Louise. Look, I must speak to your uncle in private.
Oh, but Melvin, you...
I'll explain later. That's a good
but
girl.
Really,
thank you, Louise.
Good work. I can never get rid of her. What do you want to marry Louise for, anyway?
Oh, I love her.
It's a pretty poor excuse for getting married. She's like her mother, my sister. The reason I spent all my life on the railroad.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, sir. Do you remember a certain... Spike
Higgins?
Do I remember him? If I could ever get my hands on him. You know him?
I know his ghost. He's haunting my trailer.
He is, huh? I'd certainly like to meet up with him.
Well, I'd certainly like you to. He's outside now. My trailer is parked at the curb.
Well, in that case, I was figuring on postponing the event for a few days. But for the privilege of meeting up with Spike Higgins' ghost...
Yes?
Lad, go outside and wait. I'll be out in a couple of minutes. In the spirit.
I made some excuse to Louise and hurried out to the trailer. Spike Higgins' ghost was lolling on my bunk.
Oh, out so soon, Melvin? What's the matter?
Oh, nothing, Spike. Nothing.
You're up to something. What is it?
Nothing, I tell you. Oh, relax, Spike. Relax.
I got a funny feeling. Uh-oh, someone's coming.
What do you mean, someone?
Another spook. He's coming in here. Hello, Spike. Dan Bess. In the spirit, Spike. I've been waiting for this meeting for a long time.
Oh, no, Melvin, you double-crossed...
After him. Quick, Mr. Basher.
Right, you are, lad.
I rushed outside. 3 blocks away, I saw a long freight train puffing away. Spike Higgins' ghost was racing for it with Dan Basher's spirit gaining on him. For the first time in a week, I felt happy again.
Melvin.
Louise.
Melvin. Uncle Dan, he's gone.
Yes, I know he is.
You know? Well, what do you mean?
Well, I just saw him running for that freight train.
You saw Uncle Dan running for a freight train?
Oh, I certainly did. Wonderful fellow, your uncle.
Well, Melvin, are you mad?
Mad? Not a bit. I am as happy as a lark.
Well, you must be out of your mind. Your poor Uncle Dan has... Oh, Melvin, and you just stand there laughing about it. Laughing.
But Louise, you don't understand.
Oh, I understand all too well. You want to break our engagement.
Hiya, Melvin. So you want to get rid of me, do you?
I certainly do.
There, I knew it. I just knew it.
Louise, darling.
Oh, just like a dame, always weeping.
Will you shut up? Isn't there any way to get rid of you?
Well, there certainly is. Goodbye, Melvin McGraw, forever. Louise.
Oh, never mind, Melvin. You've always got me.
Well, that's my story. I'm a desperate man. Louise sent me back my ring, and I'm stuck with Spike Higgins' ghost. I should have known he'd outsmart Dan Basher. He left Dan's spirit hunting the freight train for him and came straight back to me. Now I'll never get rid of him. I'm just a shadow of my former self. I can't get a job. Oh, look. Do any of the radio stations carrying my story need a good sound effects man for mystery programs? Oh, with me and Spike Higgins' ghost working together, we can guarantee authentic effects. Here, look. We'll give you a demonstration. Spike, let's have the creaking door. Now the fatal warning.
Are you prepared to meet your maker?
Now the dog howling in the cemetery.
Dear me.
Roma's house. Roma's house.
Really, I don't know whether to take it seriously or not. A haunted trailer. It would be just the thing for my summer vacation. I do know a haunted telephone booth where I make all my calls. No, but I'm just joking. There are no such things as ghosts. Are there, Spike?
Oh, of course there ain't. Well, the whole idea is ridiculous.
Did you see? Oh, you have to get off here? I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler. And now you can also enjoy other tense and dramatic stories of The Mysterious Traveler in the June issue of The Mysterious Traveler magazine. In our cast were James Stevens, Larry Haynes, Bill Zuckert, and Shirley Blank, with Maurice Tarplin starred in the title role. Music is under the direction of Emerson Buckley and was composed by Richard DuPage. This program came from New York. The dramatized stories of crime and the events leading up to the capture of the perpetrator are the order of the day on True Detective Mysteries. These stories are based on actual police file cases and have an air of authenticity seldom captured by a crime program. So, for the best in mystery listening, make a date to tune in True Detective Mysteries every Sunday over most of these stations. This program was transcribed especially for presentation to the West Coast audience at this hour. Listen again next week at this same time for Mysterious Traveler. And stay tuned now for Let George Do It, heard over most of these same stations. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Very scary, very scary. That was The Haunted Trailer.
Yep.
And, next coming remake will be a Haunted Winnebago.
The Haunted Unicycle.
And you know, as soon as silly as this show is, Dale, you can still learn something from it.
Sure can. So much better when the sound guy is paying attention. Erie House Radio probably resents the garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, next time you want to travel the country, take Ghost Town Bus Lines. That's right. Take the bus and leave the haunting to us. There you go.
There you go.
Whoa.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're here.
There we go. We got to quiet them down a little bit.
We
got a job to
do. Yeah, yeah.
We have a job to
do. We do. Oh, it's still going. Okay. I was going to say, I actually went into my archives from about 1983 and found that wonderful little bit I was telling you about. Okay, it's not wonderful, but it is a bit. So.
So when this crap is over.
Yeah, that's, now we can go to my crap.
That's right. Some more cultured crap.
Here it comes. There you go. Here it comes, kids.
It's time for the Weirdness Movie of the Week. This week we are showing that famous classic Edgar Allan Overflow's story, The Fall of the House of Flusher.
The Fall of the House of Flusher.
Wash your hands.
There you go, all 46 seconds
of it. Yeah, with special guest appearance by Ed Norton.
Ed Norton, yes. Oh, could you imagine the ghost of Ed Norton in your bathroom? That'd be funny.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, Ralphie boy, you're not holding that thing right.
Ralphie boy, you must be sitting down. It's awful dark.
When I said I wanted you to give me the moon, I didn't mean that.
It's a total eclipse. terrible.
Oh, my gosh. So Dave, that was your brother that did that?
Yeah, my brother, he was the one that said in Echo, the House of Flusher. I did the introduction back here in Akron, but and then that was his roommate that ran around flushing the toilets. Yeah.
So this was when he was he at university when he was doing this in a dorm?
He was at Defiance College. Yeah. A matter
Defiance.
Of fact, he was
good name.
Yeah. He actually is earning, he's being awarded a special award, if not this weekend, next weekend, coming right up here. It's just the highest honor that they have. He's being, for some reason, he says, I think they have mistaken identity, but they're awarding him the highest honor that they give out.
Nice. Nice.
For causing the highest water bill for that particular year?
Well, you know, they might not have caught on to that one yet, but...
Yeah.
They have.
It'll catch up to them.
Yeah, they'll back up into that one. Yeah.
Speaking of
or
back
maybe
up,
that's the reason to bring him in, to present him with a bill. That could be. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Oh.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Ooh,
oh,
righty,
the
then.
Things they could come back and charge me with. Anyway. Scary thought. One more weird tale from the weird circle.
Yeah.
This one's called the Haunted Hotel.
Yeah. That it is.
And not the one that cost $155 or $90 to get in at Disney. This one's free.
Yeah, because that... Because that would be the haunted wallet that would have to pay for that one.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed. Many of mortgages have been taken out to go to Disneyland.
No! Okay.
Who knows? Anywho, Weird Circle, the Haunted Hotel. That would be almost the name of a horror host show. Someone should try that. Someday.
That is one, isn't it? I had forgotten about that.
I was being mean, Dave. I was being mean.
Is that the gal in Hudson?
Yeah, I was being mean, Dave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. Yeah.
I've met
Welcome
her, but she doesn't really
to
talk
the Haunted
to
Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't really talk to anybody.
I haven't seen
her
interact a whole lot.
Welcome to the Hotel Parma. You can check in any time you like, but why would you?
Yes.
Wow. Parma's a friendly place. They got white socks and pink flamingos.
Wait a minute. What is the name of that place?
The Parma Hotel, I believe she said. Right?
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, there you go. This is the music from here in the lobby of the Hotel Parma.
My Parma trigger finger was a little slow there, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay, they're a little slow there too.
Yeah.
Yes, the Hotel Parma song made famous by the Sparrows.
Yep. There we go.
Stole the keys, go. Yeah. Anyway.
I wonder how much time you could get for stealing Kishka. I mean, is that like a... It's probably a misdemeanor. Anyway, the Haunted Hotel from the Weird Circle.
Yeah. There you go.
Originally broadcast...
From May 14th of 1940 and 5.
Of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, the Haunted Hotel.
Venice is a beautiful city. Its climate is ideal. Its buildings picturesque. Its atmosphere charming. But I felt almost physically incapable of pleasure as the oarsman tied his gondola to the castle's hotel mooring. For in my brain there was just one thought. I kept flying around and around like an imprisoned bat. Why is Philip dead? Why is Philip dead? And it was this that had brought me clear across an ocean to Venice.
Ah, good evening, senor.
You have a reservation for Henry Westwick?
Yes, senor. It was you who requested the northeast room on the ground floor, was it not?
That's right, overlooking the canal.
You are lucky. In the very next mail, another American named Miss James asked for the same room.
Huh?
But, of course, you had the priority.
Oh, I'm Miss James. Does that mean I can't have room 14?
Sorry, signorina, I am afraid so. Unless, of course, you can persuade Mr. Westwick to trade with you. Yours is number 15, next door to the young man here, but without a view of the canal.
You wouldn't like to exchange, would you, Mr. Westwick?
I wish I could be more gallant, Miss James, but I have a special reason for wanting 14.
Boy?
Yes?
Take these bags, room 14 and 15. Just follow the page, senor, signorina.
Thank you.
A special reason? You sound so mysterious.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm here to solve a mystery.
Really? Well, please tell me about it. Oh, that is, if you don't mind.
No, I think I'd like to, Miss James. Just to make up for not being able to switch rooms with you. 6 weeks ago, my brother married. It was very sudden. He'd met this Countess Narona and her brother Rivar while traveling through Italy. He'd fallen deeply in love with her. And they came here to spend their honeymoon.
Oh, I thought the hotel opened just last week.
Oh, it did. This was formerly an old castle. Philip rented it for a month. He was scheduled to leave the day before remodeling began.
But something happened?
He was only here 2 weeks when he died.
How shocking.
Not only that, but when I wrote to his wife for more particulars, I got no reply. She and her brother seemed to have vanished off the face of the earth. It took me a month to wind up my business affairs, but I'm determined to stay here until I find out exactly what happened to Philip. How? Why?
Yes, I can understand how you'd feel about your brother, Mr. Westwick. But you haven't told me the reason you want room 14.
That was the master bedroom. I've got a hunch. If Narona left any clue, it would be there.
Here are your rooms, sir, madame.
Well, good night and very good luck.
I'll see you around tomorrow evening, Waterhouse James.
I think so. After all, we Americans have got to stick together. And, Henry?
Yes?
My first name's Elaine.
I went into my own room, shut the door, and immediately that overwhelming sense of depression closed in on me again. For a few minutes there in the hall, Elaine's warmth and vitality had dispelled it. Now, alone, in the very place of my brother's death, I felt more than ever confused and discouraged. Where to start my search? I didn't know. As I crept between the cool sheets, I thought, oh, how much this room could tell me. If it would only speak. If I were only sensitive enough to grasp what it was saying. Then I just drifted aimlessly with the sound of the canal in my ears, lifting me up, bearing me along like a bit of wood on its surface. For a while, I didn't realize the sound had changed. That it had become a murmur of voices speaking fluid Italian. But then I began to see them, a man and a woman. Their images were slightly distorted, like an improperly focused motion picture. And even through my dream, I knew I was outside the scene, invisible to them, an audience of one.
How can you ask that of me, Rivar? You're my brother, the only one on earth I care about. How can you ask me to sacrifice myself to that
unexpected boor of an American? Do you think I'm unaware of your feelings, Narona? That I'm totally blind to how much it repels you? But what can I do? They're after me again for my gambling debts. And those men are vicious, completely unprincipled. Why, killing me would mean as little to them as snapping a toothpick. And surely you don't want my death on your soul.
Oh, please, Rivar. Don't try to work on my sympathies. You sound like such a fool.
But Narona, he's not an unkind man. Didn't he lease this castle for us and let us move in? Just on the hope that you'd marry.
Keep still, can't you?
Very well.
I shall send Westwick a note by messenger saying I accept his proposal. What's today's date, River?
It's the 16th. December 16th. And thank you, Nerona.
I don't know which happened first. The screen going blank or my mind refusing any more of the vision. But suddenly I found myself sitting up straight in bed, my eyes wide open, my hands digging convulsively into the quilt on each side of my sweat-soaked body. Oh, a horrible nightmare, I thought. And perhaps I could have accepted it as such, except for one thing. In the dream, there had been a waste paper basket near Nerona's desk, with a newspaper lying on top of it. And while I could not see the Countess nor her brother clearly, the date off that paper had been quite plain. December 15th. And my brother had written to me that his fiancée was so eager for their marriage, she had inadvertently dated her acceptance a day ahead. That detail had left my mind completely. Could this dream have been an extension of reality? Emotions undergone so vivid they had left their impress on the walls to be returned to whomever would receive them? I did not sleep much the rest of the night. I spent the next afternoon in a thoroughly fruitless search for some clue to Nerona's present whereabouts. I was rather glad by 8 o'clock to shower and change clothes at the hotel. I'd just finished dinner and decided on a stroll when I heard Elaine calling me.
Henry! Hi! You always eat dinner so late. I waited for hours and hours, and then I decided I was just too hungry.
Well, I am flattered. Want to go for a walk with me?
I'd love to. And you needn't be so pleased with yourself. It really isn't any special accomplishment of your own that you're the only decent-looking male in the hotel.
Thank you for that left-handed compliment. And are you going to chase me all over the place, Elaine?
Oh, madly. Tell me, how did today's sleuthing go, Sherlock?
Oh, not very well, I'm afraid. The only new factor I've discovered is that no one in all Venice seems to have ever seen Nerona.
Why, that's incredible.
I know. But Philip alone signed the lease, and then he and Nerona and Rivar moved into the castle. That much the real estate agent told me.
How about the servants? Surely they must have seen her.
Well, there was only one. A man named Ferrari had been with the Countess a long time. Now, he's disappeared completely. Oh, I suppose they took him with them, wherever they've gone.
You have got a puzzle, haven't you?
Well, even if I did discover that Philip was murdered, I still don't have the faintest idea of what his murderess looks like, and nobody seems familiar with their titles.
Probably phonies.
Say, I never thought of that. You know, Elaine?
What?
I'm not sure, of course, but there really may be something under that hair.
Why, no.
Ouch.
And I shall wear my brass knuckles in the future.
Madam, please, I have a very delicate stomach. Did you hear the sound it made when you belted me?
Idiot. That was my bracelet. See? 6 tiny sleigh bells and a silver chain.
Oh, well, I thought that they only put sleigh bells on horses.
Oh, you... Ow.
Maybe we'd better get back to the hotel before you really get angry. Then you'll have to carry me home. I've never met a girl like Elaine before. Pretty, intelligent, with a sense of humor, all at the same time. It was with the greatest reluctance that I finally consented to our saying goodnight, after making her promise that she'd see me next evening. But was that the only reason I wondered? Was I afraid that I might have another dream? I pulled the cover up to my shoulders. And almost instantly, as if it had been impatient for my coming, the dream began again.
I can't stand him any longer, Riva. Not another day. He's been married just 2 weeks, and already he's scrimping. Already he's being economical. Why don't you take the bus, Nerona, instead of a cab? It's just as comfortable.
And he seems to think that paying my debts absolves him of all other responsibility toward me. And what's more, that I should be eternally grateful to him for it. Has he said anything about those suits I bought?
No, he hasn't seen the bills yet. Oh, it's hard enough on you, I'll admit, but how about me? He just stays in that library, reading all the time, and refuses even to let me go outside the door without him. Riva, I'm leaving him.
No.
Why not? We've paid off those gangsters you call your friends.
Look, let's not fool ourselves, Nerona. We'll always be spending more than we've got. We can't throw him away. Just yet.
Baron Rivar, Mr. Westbrook wants to see you. I'm afraid it's that tailor bill.
Oh, Lord. Now I'll have to stand there like a disobedient little boy while he gives me a dressing gown.
I said I thought you were out of the house, but
seen you come in.
How's your cold, Ferrari?
Oh, not too good, Countess. Not too good.
If only there was some way to have Westwick's money without his presence. Or if we could just make a quick killing and... Yes, a quick killing.
Riva, no.
Do you want to live with that man the rest of your days? Tell me, Nerona, does your husband carry any life insurance? All had gone black again. I was pushing desperately through the thick sludge of sleep, struggling back into consciousness. It was nearly dawn. The world from my window looked cool and clean and quiet. I was so shaken I could barely dress. But I knew only a long walk would calm my shivering nerves. And besides, there were a few telegrams I had to send. Telegrams which might clear up the mystery of Philip's death.
Candygram for Mongo. Candygram for Mongo. There we go. That's the kind of telegram I want.
A candygram?
For Mongo, yes.
Oh, okay.
Mongo like candy.
Oh, no. Don't shoot him. You'll just get Mongo angry.
Yeah, just make him mad.
Yep.
There we go. So, part one, pretty interesting.
Going on.
Yeah.
Interesting little learning a story from haunted dreams or haunted voices there, yeah.
Intriguing.
Dave, you used to, you go on, ghost walks and train rides and what, ghost, fiestas and ghost parachuting.
Ghost parachuting.
Yeah, you never heard of ghost parachuting?
Was that the new thing now?
It's a tough one to see from that high. Oh, okay.
There, you got a ghost.
Yeah, that's true. That always hurts. But it's not the fall, it's that sudden stop at the end, you know?
No, but with your experiences and having gone on these ventures, how would you define haunting? Because, like, a person could be haunted or a place could be haunted. How do you personally define it?
How do I personally define it? Here's kind of my definition of a haunting. Now, of course, a person being haunted sometimes haunted more by memories and regret than he is by an actual spirit. I believe that we all have a spirit, and sometimes when we're gone, the spirit doesn't always follow where it's supposed to go, or at times it defiantly stays, or other times it doesn't even know it's dead, and so it just kind of sticks around. So therefore, it's usually trying, in my definition, it's trying to stick around to a familiar place.
Sounds like me.
Yeah.
He's too stupid to know he's dead. That's
either that or. Or that thing, you know, payback or revenge of a dish best served cold.
Something, they don't have, they haven't finished a job or something. Or, you know, I don't think it's a matter of being stupid. I think a lot of times there are people who were very ill who didn't know that they had died in some cases.
No, in my case, it's stupid.
Oh, you just didn't know you were dead. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see that. I can see me not being able to figure it out. What happened?
And probably most of the stories are just good stories, but if one-tenth of the stories out there of sightings and things like that were true, there'd be a heck of a lot of truth to what's happening out there. And and I think there are people that are more sensitive to seeing spirits. You know, there are people like we up in Cleveland, that original ghost whisperer, the lady that actually kind of was a producer in both The Ghost Whisperer and that one that Cliff Arquette's granddaughter was in, a medium. She was a medium, yeah. Even though she was maybe a little, well, you know, a little large, but she was a medium. Anyway.
Stop. I was yelled at for body shaming. You cut it out, too.
Yeah.
Hey,
I'm
what are you
watching.
Talking about? I've often said that, you know, if I went ballet, I couldn't wear a tutu. I'd have to wear a 3-3 or a 4-4, you know. So it's, you know, I body shame myself just as much.
Well, and family wise too. You know, the wife was saying I'm out of shape. I said, no, I'm not. Round is a shape.
Round is a shape. Yeah, yeah.
Is a shape.
I did approach it delicately in one of our shows. Kat Givens was our medium, Kitty Spooky Cat. And Kathleen introduced me to her, and she, I'm trying to understand this medium thing, and I didn't. It's just, yeah, a medium. A medium? Yeah, sure. Well, what do you think, Dave? She's a little bigger than that, you know.
Wow.
Wow.
Ow, ow, ow.
Ow. Okay, I have the ruler in my hand. Put your hand out, Dave. Your hand out, Dave.
Some of us might like it. You might want to rethink that strategy.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you going to wear your nun helmet? If you do, I'll really like that.
Yeah. Some of us prefer it. Yeah. Some of us pay extra for it.
Gosh.
At Olga's house of, I don't know, whatever.
Olga's house of Kishkas?
Yes.
There you go. Yes.
Is that what they're calling it now, Kishkas?
Yes. Oh, wow. yeah, sure.
Ooh,
Kishka it is.
Why? Yes. Why not?
Keep our G rating here while we can.
Yeah, exactly. Miss Gar, wish you were here. I'm doing
maybe
best.
PG. Maybe PG.
No, what she means is she wishes Gar were here and she weren't. That's what she means, right?
Hey, we got enough time to wrap up. The Weird Circle. The Haunted Hotel.
The day went well, incredibly better than I'd hoped. And yet, getting my key from the desk that evening, I realized I was right back where I stood. I walked down the corridor and hesitated in front of Elaine's door. Should I knock and say hello? Or wait till I was dressed for dinner? Well, that problem was quickly solved.
Good evening.
Well, how did you know I was here?
Well, ours are the only rooms at the end of this hall. I heard you walk by and stop, and no sound of a key.
For a moment, you had me worried. I thought you were psychic.
Oh, I am. Didn't you know? I'm the seventh daughter of a seventh son of a seventh son. They slipped me in because they thought they were getting in a rut.
Really? Well, then I don't have to tell you what I found out today, do I? Oh, you know it already.
Oh, come on inside, you horrible creature, and stop keeping me in suspense. Now, tell me all about it.
Well, I feel like a pawn in a chess game, Elaine. The minute my side forges ahead, something occurs to checkmate it.
Like what, for instance?
Well, like discovering Philip had been insured for $50,000.
$50,000?
I telegraphed all the insurance companies in America today, and one of them cabled the information immediately.
Why, Henry, you're brilliant. Whatever gave you the idea?
Well, I've been having... It was just a hunch. They gave me the name of Philip's examining physician here in town who filled in the death certificate, and I checked up on him this afternoon.
Yes?
No. Straight as a die. Got the best reputation of any doctor in Venice. Now, he swears my brother died of bronchitis, and, well, I'm sure the insurance examiners weren't any too cheerful about handing out $50,000, especially with only one premium paid on it, but they believed him.
Oh, that means a dead trail again, huh?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, Henry, I wish I could help you. Is there only something I could do?
I'll tell you what, Elaine. Get into a fluffy dress and clasp those funny little sleigh bells around your wrist and... We'll go out and really see Venice tonight.
Okay, Henry. I'll meet you in the lobby in 10 minutes.
What?
You've been trying to act gay all evening. That's exactly what it's been, an act.
I'm sorry, Elaine. I didn't mean to worry you with my...
You worry me much more when you won't tell me. What worries you?
I know you're tired. It's nearly 2 o'clock and you've been yawning for the past half hour. Elaine, would you think me crazy if I told you I was afraid to go back into my room? Afraid to go to sleep?
But why?
I have the most hideous dreams. All about Philip, the Countess, and her brother.
Oh, good heavens, Henry. That's perfectly natural. The three of them are constantly on your mind. And you are using your own as old room.
But the nightmares seem to be planned. They seem to have a purpose behind them.
Look, if you wish, I'll gladly change rooms with you.
No. No, thanks a lot, Elaine. But the least I can do for whatever's trying to give me the message is to receive it. Good night, folks. It comes so easily now. Perhaps because I was too anxious to get into the dream, or because for the first time I'd acknowledged a complete belief in it. At any rate, my eyes simply wouldn't stay closed. My mind kept whirling ceaselessly. I tried to lie very quietly, without thrashing, and my body grew taut and straining with the effort. Finally, just as I felt I could stand this immobility no longer, the thread snapped. My brain went limp, and the shadow play continued.
Take another look, Riva. He promised he'd come immediately.
The doctor's not here yet, Nerona. Do you think I'm blind?
No. I'm sorry. It's just nervousness, I guess.
Poor sister. Never mind. It'll be all over with by tomorrow.
Yes, Ferrari. Ah, but we should come to this, Riva. The only friend we have left. And we bury him in another's grave.
I don't mind, Countess. In fact, I should be flattered. Think how long I shall be pointed out as a millionaire instead of the pauper I really am. Twice before I had this illness, I knew a third attack would be fatal.
He's coming. Quickly now, Ferrari. Repeat your story.
Yes. I am Philip Westwick. Last week I caught cold, but I refused to have a doctor, even though my wife pleaded strenuously that I should. I hold a $50,000 policy on my life. At any event, of my death, I wished the doctor to communicate with him. My wife will arrange all the funeral details and notify my relatives in America.
Right. Now, I must go into the library and find my husband. He'll be pleased to see me, I'm sure. There's a small jeweler's bill of mine he's taken in there to study. Oh, well. That'll soon be over for good. And it's most important Philip doesn't wander into this part of the house while the doctor's still here. That might prove awkward.
Nerona, when do we finish with Philip?
Tonight, after the doctor's safely gone.
How?
Tonight.
But you know I can't stand the sight of blood.
Don't worry, I intend to do this thing myself. I do not propose to have it bungled. There, he's at the door now. Wait until I'm out of sight, then answer it. And Riva?
Yes?
If the doctor asks where Mrs. Westwick is, tell him my constant vigilance has tired me so. I'm asleep in another room.
Very well, Nerona. Very well.
The tableau faded slowly before my eyes. Try as my subconscious would to call it back, make it unreal further for me. The curtain remained stubbornly closed. I didn't wake after this dream, as I always had before. Sank into a dense hypnotic slumber. Then I felt hot, bright fingers of sunlight touch my eyelids. I knew it was morning, and I awoke. Between bath and my breakfast, I formulated a final plan. Something in last night's vision had given me an idea. It was just a little lead, to be sure, but everything else had turned out in blind alley. So I had to try it. I was sitting on the floor in the library, surrounded by books, when Elaine walked in. Oh, looking for someone, lady?
What? Oh, Henry. Is this where you've been all afternoon? I just came in to get a magazine, because when you're not around, the hotel's so boring.
Thank you for them kind words, ma'am. You can add them to my bill when I leave.
What are you doing? Is this another clue in the case of the missing countess? Or have you simultaneously lost your mind and found a new variation on paper dolly?
It's a clue, I think. Sit down here. Make yourself useful.
All right. Now what?
Well, look through this pile of books and see if you can find a bill or a letter. I have reason to believe Nerona bought some jewelry.
So what? All women buy jewelry. Even I do.
If we can find out where she bought it, we'll be able to get her description. See?
Oh, of course. What a dope I am.
Oh, I never argue with a lady.
What?
If the bill's not here, it won't matter too much. I'll canvass every jewelry store in Venice till I hit the right one.
How come you're so sure of this angle, Henry? Did you find out something new?
Well, I had a dream about Nerona last night.
Oh, well, tell me, Henry. What does she look like? Is she beautiful?
That's funny, but I don't really know. It's as though I'm nearsighted and can't get the image distinctly. Help me, I've tried. Hey.
What? Oh, Henry, it's a letter. Well, open it quickly. See if it's the one we want.
It is. A bill made out to Philip for 3,000 lira. Oh, Elaine, this is the break. This is the opening wedge. I've got a hunch that from now on the mystery's going to crack wide open. I'm going to phone this jeweler for an appointment.
I don't want to be a killjoy, Henry. But it says on the bill, store hours from 10 to 6. It's nearly 7 now.
Oh. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll go tomorrow. Tonight we'll celebrate. We'll have truffles and nightingale tongues and champagne. The works.
Anyway, Henry, we'll have the champagne.
Late that night, when we returned to the hotel, I felt more than ever that at last I was getting to the root of Philip's death. I crept into bed. I could wait for the dream calmly now, because I was no longer running around in circles, right at the threshold to my brother's vengeance. I recognized the corridor outside my own door. Rivar and Nerona walking softly toward it.
You're sure you can do it?
I'm not afraid. I'll go through with my end of it. Just be sure you don't mess up yours. Remember now, the biggest wine cask you can find in the cellar. And so a wide enough hole in the top so the body will go through.
Have you got the knife?
Of course. Now go, for heaven's sake. You make me nervous.
I watched her with an icy, agonized horror no earlier dream had produced. She stealthily opened the door. I could see Philip at the window, his back toward us, gazing out over the canal. I didn't seem to hear her footsteps sliding across the floor, coming nearer and nearer to him. I wanted to shout, scream at him, warn him against Nerona. I knew I was just a spectator, watching a hideous motion picture, and I could not change this ending. She stopped dead, motionless, just in back of him. I saw her hand come up slowly, the short, slender knife, the blade glittering up brightly as the bracelet on her wrist. Just as it started downward for the final thrust, I heard a familiar sound. It was then I realized the dream had dissolved and that I was gazing up at reality. I grabbed her hand.
Go!
Elaine, it was you.
Let me go!
No. Sniping one member of the Westlake family is quite enough. Countess Nerona.
One moment more and you'd never have known my identity.
Yes, I would. I'd seen your hand with a knife, with a sleigh bell bracelet.
So, that gave me away. The last thing your brother ever paid for alive, Henry. If you had not found the bill for it, I shouldn't have tried to kill you tonight.
No. When would you have tried to kill me, Countess?
Perhaps never. I liked you, Henry. Riva and I learned of your arrival from the shipping news while we were at Milan collecting Philip's insurance from the branch office there. I followed you, of course, to make sure you discovered nothing. However, we were both unfortunate.
Especially you, Nerona. Walk in front of me to the telephone. I've got the dagger now, remember. Night clerk, will you please call the police? Tell them there's a murderess in room 14. Yes, thank you. Go on, Nerona. What about your American accent? It's quite perfect.
I really am a countess, even though from an obscure town in Luxembourg. And I was given the appropriate education. I could speak 6 languages fluently at the age of 10. However, one cannot turn titles into bread nowadays, and so we had to live by our wits, Riva and I.
Come in.
Signora Westwick, they are here. Shall I send them in?
No. I shall go out to them. Henry, take this bracelet to remember me by. Such little deaths. One would not think them capable of
sounding a deaf man.
Signora, the authorities grow impatient.
Of course. Goodbye, Henry.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Elaine.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the immortal story of the Haunted Hotel. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Yes, Master. I'll ring the bell.
There we have the Haunted Hotel.
Ew.
Yes.
Thank you, Igor.
It's pronounced Igor. No, it was pronounced Igor. That's right.
Igor, yes. Igor, yes. That's Igor.
Damn your eyes. Too late. Tomorrow, more hauntings with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Haunted Mill.
Yes. So, more hauntings.
Not The Haunted Mill House.
A lot of ghosts.
I'm not a crook. I'm not a crook.
As long as you can go to the Haunted Coffee House, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
The Haunted Watergate.
Oh, that haunted him for a long time.
Dave, you're the audiophile here. We got a little bit of time to talk about this. I remember something early on the Ghoul Show in the early 70s, and someone had come out with a comedy album about the Watergate scandal. And I remember there being this one, like, quartet where Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean.
And Dean. Yeah, that was a single song. That wasn't necessarily, because there was one, the Watergate comedy album had Avery Shriver was the lead in that. Hilarious, they did. But
yeah.
They did do a song, but it wasn't that one. I think that was something that was done and sent in to directly to Dr. Demento.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to know the source of that, because it's one of my old memories of watching The Ghoul on Channel 61 back in the day.
Yeah.
Early 70s, yeah.
Because I remember that from Dr. Demento. I tell you something else I found from Dr. Demento just recently, Dale.
Yes.
A recording that Spike Jonze Jr. did of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Oh, good heavens.
And believe it or not, there's a lot of the father in Spike Jonze Jr. Makes me wonder, the only thing that he had that got any kind of widespread press was the Demolition Disco. But it actually, I thought it was really unique. The Raindrop, his Spike Jonze Jr. version of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And again, I think it's something made and sent straight into Dr. Demento.
Ooh, we should get our hands on that. It'd be fun.
Oh,
well,
please.
Yeah, well,
it's on them YouTubers.
Hopefully both Gar and his internets will be healed tomorrow, because after our show at 6:30 Eastern, there's always Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yeah,
on the Twitch.
Better, brother. Yeah.
Twitch, yes, Twitch. Get better. Feel better. Feel better.
Or else, we'll come over to your house and bug you.
Wow, that's a heck of a
eat
goal.
Eat all your cheese or something. I don't know. Eat all the cheese.
We'll send you
sounds
quiche-gas.
Mousy Dale.
Yeah, we'll take
time
your quiche-gas.
I think.
Do horrible things to your quiche-gas. Right. That pretty much takes care of that. We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her!
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Watch it, Vincent.
Don't come alone.
Drink them up and safely and drively.
That's right. If you want to drive, remember to use your car.
Mm-hmm. Don't drink and drive. You might spill your drink.
That's right. Those shop corners are killers, man.
Yeah.
What's that, Tiger Woods?
Oh, dear.
Mm.
But while Dale was fretting about, oh my gosh, what happened to Dave? Is he okay? Is he in the ditch? Is he lost in another dimension?
Yeah, I was lost in another dimension, but I made it back in time.
Yep.
So.
Yes, I made mention to the fact that I'm due to have another jab.
Ah, yes.
Uh-oh. I mean, that's probably good. I'm sure that's good.
It's very good.
It sounds like it might not be good for us.
It depends on how I feel. Usually I'm okay, but I know I've lost count. How many have we had? 5, 9, 60? I don't know. But anyway. You know, first of all, the pharmacist has to give me a lollipop, and I insist upon my Smurf Band-Aid, and then, you know, I get a balloon.
Smurf Band-Aids? They still make Smurf Band-Aids? I would check.
Yeah, they do.
I would check the expiration date on that.
Yeah.
Band-Aid has an expiration date?
They should.
Really?
Everything should have an expiration date.
Oh, my gosh. I thought Band-Aids were like Twinkies, but perhaps.
Yeah, they last forever and ever.
Ever and ever. Twinkies and Spam, they last forever.
Oh, gosh. But then who cares about the Spam?
I do. I like Spam.
I love your Spam.
Wonderful Spam.
Bloody Vikings,
hey, guys. Oh, so when does this new job take effect?
Oh, on the morrow. Tomorrow.
Wow, you start tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So this is number 4.
Nine.
This is the fourth interview? Fourth
interview? Nine.
Ninth interview?
No. Four, eight, ten. Anyway, there's a needle. And I know it's not a big needle, but it reminds me of, you know, I don't know, something Dr. Frankenstein.
Harpoon?
Dr.
Frankenstein. Like a harpoon?
Yeah. Bar, she blows. Oh, God. Dr. Frankenstein.
You know, whenever I think of harpoon, I think of the very early, very, very early Tom and Jerry. And the Ahab was running around, walking around on his peg, and say, "Arg, Dickie Moe, Dickie Moe," instead of Moby Dick. It was.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Remember that one?
I do.
Didn't Bullwinkle, didn't Moose and Squirrel do a takeoff on that, or Dickie Moe, or maybe Dick, the Wailin' Whale?
Eeny, meeny, chilly beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Ooh, he's ready with that one.
All right.
I heard Bullwinkle, I went crazy.
Anyway.
He make funny sound.
Well, if you're having an interview, we wish you the best of luck.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
No, it's not an interview. There's a great big needle coming at me. It goes right in the arm, and I go ouch and cry and moan and wail and whine and, you know.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I go off and play a video game.
There you go. Video games make everything better.
Yeah, let's see. I don't know. I'll play something to cheer me up. I don't know. A couple of rounds of Halo and blow something up, or Diablo.
You know.
Call of War.
See, in the world, to me, the world has changed for the better, because You could not find, when I was younger, I must be a lot older than you or something, or you're just way ahead of your time. Girls didn't do cool things. They didn't watch monster movies. They didn't read comic books, at least in the area I grew up. And it was like, that's horrible. I had nobody that I could relate to, you know?
I'll tell you that if, yeah, you guys heard of Bijou Trimble, right?
Who?
You have. Oh, my God, I'm ashamed to know you. Even more so than usual. Bijou Trimble.
I'm lost, quick, too, so you can be ashamed of me, Bijou. Too, CW.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
Her first name is B-J-O, B-J-O with last name Trimble. When Star Trek, the original Trek, was on the air and was going to be canceled in the second season, she is the one who started the letter-writing campaign to get it another season.
That's you?
Not single-handedly, but she... sorry. That was before me.
Hey, you're a gal of mystery, so I got to throw that out there, you know.
Okay. Yeah, okay. But anyway, okay. So, Bijou Trimble, she wrote a book called The Good Ship Enterprise. And she was a total fan. She met Harlan Ellison. She kind of sort of dated the guy before she met her husband. Yep, she got on to the set of Here Come the Brides. That's in her book. But anyway, there were a lot of women then, a lot of girls, who kind of went in the undercurrent because it was just not ladylike to be a fan. But believe me, a lot of brothers who, when they weren't in their room, their comic books would sneak into their sister's room, and they were reading Sergeant Rock and all this other stuff. They were watching Twilight Zone. They were watching horror movies. It's just like he didn't have female race car drivers. But there were a lot of women who loved the taste of speed. They got in their Studebakers, and they were racing down to the grocery store. And you hear the little brake squeal, and then you see this little prim and proper lady coming out with her gloves on and her heels and her pearls and her necklace.
Goggles.
Doing her grocery shopping at the A&P. So,
sounds like Penelope Pit Stop to me.
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. But there's always been, although it's a bygone term, femme fans have always been out there. Now we're out in force. So get the heck out of my way, or I'll terminate you.
No. No, I welcome it. I welcome it.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of the generation now because, easier for a young fella to find that is interested in those things to hook up with somebody who is also.
Actually, it's usually the other way around. The girl would say, oh, my God, it's Chris and Chris. Chris Pine, Chris Pratt, The other Chris, we're going to this convention. Shut up and pack. I'm going. You're going with me. Get in the car right now. I'm not asking. Get in the car.
I like to be ordered about.
I was going to say, again, this is something we might pay extra for. You can't win with us. There's something wrong with everything.
We're old, decrepit guys. We have to have something, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, when I get my vaccination, tell them to give me another vaccination just to tamper.
You might need it. I've got to get the Erie House stink off of me. Help me. I need to
Depends on where you vaccinate me. That's what I want to know. Yep. Hey, I'm going to be filming some new sketches, and I have some new wireless microphones I'm going to be using. It blew me away that this could be some of the best sound that I've ever gotten from my stuff. I haven't really complained about my audio, but wow, this stuff blows me away. So I can't wait.
Your audio has been very good.
Yeah, well, we're going to be filming these in a toy store and in Ellet.
Wow.
And it's Toys and Noise, four sketches. And I'm so excited about these microphones.
Nice.
That's another career that's going to go by the wayside, because microphones are getting better and better, so you can secret them in small places. You won't need boom mics anymore. For major motion pictures, they'll probably do away with the boom mic.
And it's going to be perfect for two people shoots when I have more than that. I'm trying to figure a way that I can kind of have these hidden in plain sight and use with multiple people. But when I only have two people, it's going to be darn near perfect sound. So
nice.
Very nice.
I'm excited. Can't wait to catch it, especially since we've...
Can't wait to make some noise.
Now, I'm telling you. And I'll be making noise at Toys and Noise in Ellet, Ohio.
Is what movie? It's got to be toy related.
No, these are just for four sketches. I'm trying to get my bank filled back up again of sketches that people haven't seen. I already have some still.
Stash of skits. There you go.
Right. I wish I had a toy related. There's March of the Wooden Soldier, so I may do a Christmas movie there. Laurel and Hardy.
That's a good one.
The original black and white is in public domain.
Yep.
I may be doing that one from there later this year. And I've got, with all of the different Christmas songs that I've done, those will be thrown in there as well. So
cool.
Come up with Christmas sketches. And so, I'm sure after this shoot, the owner will either welcome us in or lock the door when he sees me coming.
Bar the doors. Both the
but
doors.
Actually,
he's got a camera. Run.
Actually, I wrote a part in for him, and he gets to zap himself with a toy ray gun, and he disappears. So.
Nice.
Good one.
So his biggest problem with letting me do it, he kept saying, how much is this going to cost me? It's nothing. No, really. How much is this going to cost me? This is the whole question look I got from him. So now he's explaining what we do and how we do it. So.
Oh, you mean just all my friends? No, I'm kidding. That's what it'll cost me. I see.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
So anyway, we have looking forward to that shoot on Tuesday. Kathleen is going to be there with me. She's done some of my really classic sketches. She did that one with you, Dale.
That's your cuz, right?
My cuz. And
she's great.
So she was in that. She was in the new pair of pants. She was in the first set of cartoons that they did on us. She's an amazing writer as well. She has written a lot of blogs and just some very, very interesting things along the way. And I've learned a lot by working with her.
Yep, she had a radio blog there for a while, too. Or still does, maybe?
Yeah, the soup? Cat Soup.
Cat Soup,
yeah.
Cat Soup.
Katsoup.
Yep.
For Kathleen,
Soup. Good stuff.
Cat Soup. Nice one.
I've heard a few of her broadcasts. She's very talented.
Yep. She's coming to the station to do that, but now I don't think her job now, although it is from home, it's very regimented as to when she can, when she is working. So, as you well know, Dale.
Ah, yes. A few more years of this nonsense.
Yeah.
Then it's look out.
Then it's playtime.
Then it's playtime, exactly. Exactly what it'll be.
Most people, unbeknownst to many bosses, it was always playtime at work. People were just, I'm plunking away at the computer. You're a great employee, A number one, was secretly I flipped the screen and I'm playing online.
And I, for one, couldn't be prouder.
Prouder.
Oh,
4 years. She's never been grumpy a single day she's worked here.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. Yep. That was at a former job, but they miss me and I don't miss them.
There you go.
Yeah, but yep. I do miss their Wi-Fi. Ah, yes, it used to broadcast.
I miss their Wi-Fi. I love it.
And their IT person was not the brightest light on the Christmas tree.
They usually aren't. Our head of security, which is also one of our IT guys, walks around looking down. He can't look anybody in the eye. He has a hard time talking to people.
He may be one of the people who they relate better to machines versus real people. So he may know his machines, but he just can't talk to anybody.
My son is like that a little bit.
You got to fake it till you make it. I mean, I'm not that big of a people person, but I'll walk up to you and say, well, hello, how are you today on this fine morning where I'm saying, oh, my God, where's a semi-truck that runs you down when I need one? But you have a super-duper day.
Your semi-truck day.
Falls on your head. Yeah. And look out, there is that meteor that's going to fall on your head. Okay. But I digress.
Yeah, you got to watch all that digress.
You have to learn to be nice to people. You know, in your mind, you're going through all these different scenarios. You're falling into a sinkhole, but you're treating them to a coffee. And accidentally put arsenic in the coffee. But, you know, think happy thoughts. Go to your happy place.
My happy place.
We're too old for happy places, Dale.
Yep.
You know,
for me, it'll be the happy home.
We're not too old. Yeah. Fortunately, we're not too old for happy meals. We like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, or any other kind.
Well, you're happy. You can do what they did in Arsenic and Old Lace. You can go with Uncle Teddy to Happy Valley. Ah, yes, Happy Valley.
Yes, I can be bought for food.
Well, guys, with that, I must be away. But without further ado, if you could someone knock on Mr. Durante's door and tell him
Sage
is waiting for him. Yeah.
Here you go, Jimmy. Come on out of the closet. I don't know. Wherever you're hiding.
Good night, dog. Good night.
Boudoir.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. What more is this say but good night?
Good night already.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Ari, go up, we the same, and
Inca-tink-a-doo.
Inca-tink-a-doo. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Mrs. Calabash,
wherever
you are.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by...